Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
The Buffalo Bills select Josh Allen, Gregory Rousseau, Kair Elam, Dalton Kincaid.
Some of the past first-round picks of the Buffalo Bills. Some have worked out tremendously. Josh Allen. Some yet to work out very well. Kair Elam. Some kind of in the middle. Greg Rousseau. I think Greg Rousseau is a good player. Bills are going to pick up his fifth-year option. You never know what's going to happen. I saw something from Dan Graziano this morning. It said, here's the thing that a lot of fans don't really realize. No one, including the teams, actually knows how well these guys are going to play once they get to the league. It is a lot of guesswork. All you can do is rely on your intel, your information, and everything you've done leading up to the process. But we are here. It is draft day. Good morning. It's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase. What's been the vibe this morning, Joe? I didn't have a chance to listen to you and Jeremy much this morning. I joined you guys a little bit earlier. What's been the vibe, whether it's what you're reading out there about the draft or fans calling you, tweeting you, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's been a lot of trade-up debate, I think, back and forth. And also,
okay,
you know, is everyone at a point where they've got a guy that you want them? That, we did that with quarterback, right, in 2018. Does everyone have a guy that you want? So a little bit of those two things, but the trade-up noise, smoke, Matt Miller talking about the Bills and Adunze yesterday. There was before that Benjamin Albright, and there have been others, I think, too. Trading up just seems more and more like the conversation. Like, should they do it? Should they not do it? Are they going to do it? Because, I don't know, the closer we get to the draft, I tend to feel like they are trying to and that they are going to do it. Bill Belichick said on the Pat McAfee show last week that if you hear rumors before, like, the weeks leading up to the draft, it's almost always agents just trying to do their work to get their guys higher. But the 24 hours leading up to the draft, those are the real, those there's validity to a lot of those. That's what Belichick said. So I'm tending to think that it's more believable, the things that we're seeing this morning and even last night.
All right, well, I'm so glad that you said that's been the vibe this morning, because that's what we're going to do, at least for the first half hour today. We got a really awesome show planned for you. We're going to get with Michael Nanya at the bottom of the hour. He actually hosts the Cool Your Jets podcast. A very interesting team, I think, over the last few days, Joe. The Jets, they're sitting there at 10. Could they take Rome Odunze? Could they draft an offensive tackle? It's been Brock Bowers all the way here. And then Aaron Rodgers' situation, like, what are they looking to do? I think that's a real pivotal point there for the Bills if they do want to trade up and get a guy like Rome Odunze, which would be massive. I actually have an article at WGR550.com that we can talk about relating to this, which is what it would cost to move up. I actually did the research on, you know, previous drafts, took the draft chart, put it all together and said, you know what, if the Bills wanted to move up, it would probably cost about this for this spot with this team. We're also going to have our guy Emery Hunt joins us in an hour. One final push from Emery to kind of talk about and ask him about, you know, how he sees these players. He is actually, I think, believe it or not, he has Rome Odunze higher than both Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. So it's really interesting when you get a perspective like that, right? So, but we'll talk about that. We'll find out why and what other options and where he could see the fit for the Bills at different positions. So we'll do that today here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I'm so glad, Joe, that you brought up fans kind of saying, you know, who they are. Are they attached to one person? Who's your guy? That's what we're going to do. Call your shot, everybody. Here we go. We're going to give you the next 25 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes, to call your shot. But you only do that by calling us. 803-0550. What I mean by call your shot is you can call up and say this is what they're going to do, or you can call up and say I really want them to do this, or I definitely do not want them to do this. Whatever it is, just call your shot. We'll get connected with you. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Now, I do have a mock draft where I have the Bills staying at 28 and taking Xavier Worthy, only because I don't do trades. I'm calling my shot, Joe. You know I've been on the trade-up thing for a long time. I think the Bills are looking to deal up. I think they ultimately will deal up. It's what Brandon Bean does. I think most likely it's for Brian Thomas Jr. once he gets to a certain spot, like maybe in the late teens, early 20s.
Yeah. Thomas is the guy I would bet right now they're most likely to take. Just the fit, the range that he's going to go in, the frequency that Bean likes to move up, even if it's just a little bit. Recent mocks and odds that kind of show that he's, you know, maybe more for the later teens and early 20s than somewhere higher than that. I think a lot of the smoke on Xavier Worthy rising on boards, and maybe not even rising on boards, just maybe we're getting closer and figuring out where teams are having him, and his numbers are going through the roof. Like, middle of the first round is becoming more and more common for Worthy. And if he's going to go higher than we all thought, then I think that means Thomas probably gets pushed down a little bit. And again, I think he fits everything the Bills need. I think the odds that he's going to be in range for them are higher than I thought they were weeks ago. So I think Thomas, I might even be willing to call him my favorite idea. But beyond that, I would guess right now, what are we, probably 13 hours-ish before they make their pick, that he's going to be the guy they call the name of.
The thing that's happened really over the last 48 hours, Joe, is the offensive tackles have risen,
yes,
which has pushed everybody down.
Yeah.
Right? That's been kind of the the consensus from a lot of the national people who are a bit plugged in, saying the offensive tackles are rising. This is a good offensive tackle draft, by the way. Every time that I do a mock, every time I look at it, there's a team that needs a tackle. I'm like, oh, you have like these three guys. Who's the highest rated? And it might just really come down to your flair, because there's definitely some guys who are, there's probably a good four or five guys worthy of first-round picks, and it looks like you might get that many even before the Bills pick. Great. Do it, everybody. Go draft offensive tackles, because the more offensive tackles that get chosen, the more everything else gets pushed down the board, as you were talking about a little while ago. So there's some key pivotal moments and points in this draft. Now, I think the first key pivotal moment and point is something that really doesn't even have to deal with the Bills, but it is really interesting with the ripple effect. That's going to be number three. Are we set on what the Patriots are going to do, do you think? Is it Drake May?
Man.
Because I think it's going to be Williams and Daniels 1 and 2.
I have no, that is the team I feel like I've got no grasp, and I don't think many have much of a grasp on what it is that they are going to do at number three. I think anything is on the table. I think drafting May could be. I think drafting Jaden Daniels. I know I saw, who said it? Was it Peter Schrager? Someone from NFL Network said in the last hour or so, don't think Jaden Daniels at number two is a slam dunk. So if Daniels there at three, that could be New England's pick. I think Harrison could be New England's pick, and I think maybe above all that, trading out of three is very likely as well. There's J.J. McCarthy saying yesterday that he thinks he's going to the Giants. He said that on the Rich Eisen show, that his best guess right now is he's going to the Giants. So do the Giants move up to three and pick their guy there? So when it comes to New England, it almost feels like everything is on the table for them. And I haven't read reports a lot this morning on them, but that was the vibe I was getting waking up this morning.
That's the first key pivotal point, I think. And then you can go to four and five. And, of course, a lot of people believe the Vikings are going to trade up to five with the Chargers. That might happen. That would be for a quarterback.
Uh-huh.
I think six is super interesting, right? Six is really interesting with the Giants.
Yeah.
Joe, I've heard everything from Joe Alt, offensive tackle, to Roma Dunze, Brock Bowers at tight end. You know, I've heard everything about the Giants. I really don't know what direction they're going to go, but the latest might be that they're looking for a quarterback too. And this could be trying to get up to three. This could be staying and taking Michael Penix at number six.
Right. Yeah. Let's see, on the odds right now, well, I guess they're not up. There was odds earlier this morning about the Giants and what they were favored for. And it had swung towards quarterback, probably because of what McCarthy said yesterday. But I'm thinking quarterback for the Giants right now, which If I'm Brian Daboll, I think that's what I want to do. I think it buys me a little more job security if I can have the guy playing well in his rookie year. And I just they can move off that Daniel Jones contract. Not right now, but next year they can. And I just can't. I didn't think they should have signed him in the first place. So I was already here. But they've had to have realized, I think, after the last 12 months, that you cannot keep going with Daniel Jones forever. Like, there's right. a limited timeline there. He's a limited quarterback, and you got to try to do better. A McCarthy is not the prospect, by the way, that I would think gives you that, but taking a swing at somebody and moving up just a couple of spots, it makes a lot of sense, I think, from the Giants' perspective.
All right, we put the call out, and you've answered, as you always do. We appreciate it so much here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is draft day. Let's do it. Let's call your shot. I'm actually wearing if you see, I put a video out calling people to call their shot, telling people, and I intentionally wore a Yankee shirt to say, look, Babe Ruth called this shot once, Joe. So it's time for fans to call their shot about the Buffalo Bills and the draft. Let's go to Tim in Charlotte. Go ahead, Tim. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Thanks for having me on. I saw the Twitter video, so here I am. I appreciate you
all
doing
that.
All right, buddy. So I got the first thing I can really see the Bills doing is just giving it all up, going to the top, getting the deal done. And obviously it takes two to tango, but I think they saw what happened to St. Brown yesterday and the money that he garnished. And then you've got Waddle, you've got Chase, all these guys. And there's really no reason not to trade that draft capital and go lock a guy in on cost control 5-year team option. Like, it just makes too much sense. Go get the guy you want. I really think that they're going to do that. If they can't find somebody to tango with, I think that Seattle, I think after the Seattle pick, I think they're probably going to end up just kind of getting stuck with what's left. And I really love the idea of an edge rusher dropping to them. I mean, you know, take your pick versus, you know, Chop Robinson, whatever the case may be, and then trading picks later to double dip in the second or third round because it's going to be cheaper to do. Trade into those spots. What do you guys think about that?
It's a really good thought. Let me ask Joe this, piggybacking on that, Tim. Okay, Joe, what would it take for you to say, okay, I'm okay with an edge rusher here? Would it be a certain edge rusher, or it would be a way that the receivers are off the board, or what would it take?
One, it would take probably Chop Robinson or Laiai Tuilaatu falling.
Mm-hmm.
And I would need... I'm not going to get to a place where I'm happy with that pick. If they get a receiver in round two, it will somewhat satisfy that. But it's tough, too, because they don't have a third. So you can't control the board as well as you might hope to sitting there at 60. The situation that scares me about, okay, you love Latu or you love Chop Robinson. Robinson I love, by the way. Like, not a lot of sack production at Penn State, but the deeper numbers, how often he wins against his offensive linemen he's up against, how good he is as a run stopper. Like, his advanced numbers are through the roof, and he tested well. So I might be willing to believe he, and the Bills would think this way because they've always drafted players like this. Okay, the college production wasn't fully there for the sacks, but I've got five reasons over here why they're going to happen in the NFL. All right, I'm going to buy into that. So the prospect I can get to liking, but what I then do at receiver is going to be tough because what happened 2 years ago when they traded down twice and ended up drafting James Cook was the run on receivers in round two went right in front of them. A bunch of guys went, and by the time they were up, all of the reasonable ideas that people thought were second-round receivers were gone. And they are not in a great position to prevent that from happening again. If they sit at 28 and draft Chop Robinson, and then you're up at 60, and uh-oh, that run started happening again, I'd like to move up and go get a guy. It's going to be harder because you don't have your third-round pick. You're not going to be able to jump, I don't think, 15, 20 spots in the second round if you want to, just because you are dealing with limited day-two capital that other teams are.
Let's go to Mark in Tonawanda. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
Good,
I say you send everything you got and try to get whoever you want. Create your own destiny. I'd like Ooh. To see Adunze, if not him, that Brian Thomas. After that, then you just got to pick who's the best on the board, I think.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that for a minute, Joe. I did a little analysis of what it would take to do something like that. He says, create your own destiny. Go up and do it. I mean, obviously, if you want to go up and get a Dunze, it's going to cost a Julio Jones type of deal. And I have that. If you go to WGR550.com, there are five teams I've identified that I think could be pivotal points where the Bills could move up, because those team situations with their draft capital and the Bills and where these guys might go. Some three of the trades are to identify for Brian Thomas Jr., and then two of them would be for a Dunze, and that would be Chicago Bears at number 9. Here's what I have, Joe, according to my analysis, and this is not an exact science, but what it might take to get to 9 if you really wanted to do it. You ready? You tell me if you like this.
All right.
The Bills would go to 9. The Bears would come down and get 28. So you'd swap 28 and 9. The Bills would also give them their second round pick, 60 overall, their fourth round pick, 133 overall, next year's first, and next year's sixth. So a 1, a 2, a 4, a 1, and a 6.
I am doing that. I am doing that. I'm doing that for a Dunze. I am. Yeah. I think it's worth it.
It would be very, Joe, this trade would be very similar to the Julio Jones deal. The only difference is Julio Jones deal, the Falcons gave up another fourth the following year, not a sixth, but the Bills wouldn't go to 6. They'd only go to 9. So I adjusted for that. A 1, a 2, a 4, a 1, and a 6. You go to 9 and take Roma Dunze.
I'm into that. I'm into it. I think he's the perfect player for what they need. I think he is as close to a sure thing for what you get. This is said by a lot of people. Some even have him ranked higher than third, that he would be the number one receiver prospect in a lot of these classes. And he's just subject to, well, Marvin Harrison exists and Malik Nabers exists this year. So you're going lower than those guys. I'm into it. I don't think you're going to get many opportunities to get a guy like this where he's on a rookie contract as well. And you might say, okay, well, nothing's a sure thing. That's true. Nothing is a sure thing. But I was looking this morning at success rate in the top 10. Like, I don't love the idea that, well, teams, they don't really know how to draft. It's not a perfect science by any means. But then why is the success rate of top 10 picks 85%? But then when you get to the lower first round, it's closer to 50. Why is that the case? I want the best shot. I want the highest percentage shot at the star receiver. And even the numbers, the history of the draft tells you, when you're in the top 10, that's usually going to work out in your favor. So I got to spend a ton to get there, but I don't know how often an opportunity like that would come around if someone was willing to trade down that low, and I would be willing to do it.
All right. I love it, man. I love the aggressiveness. I love the way you're talking today, Joe. Lou in East Aurora. What's up, man? You're on the Extra Point Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. First, I want to say I enjoy your work, multiple platforms. I think Western New York's lucky to have you. But that being said, this concept of lying season that everybody talks about, and I certainly think is valid, somehow has now evolved to where, but in the 24 hours, everything's true. And I've heard the paragon of honesty, Bill Belichick, quoted multiple times as if he wouldn't, throw something out there for a buddy. I just think the concept of Xavier Worthy jumping up draft boards is that perfect example of what I would consider to be an obvious con. 165-pound players is football still. And you think that, like, these GMs and these coaches are clamoring for a guy like that. I know he might be able to return a punt or two before he gets creamed, but I just can't buy into this idea that this is a guy. And I, honestly, in all honesty, I hope Bean's the one floating that rumor, because I would love for somebody to jump up and take Xavier Worthy in front of us and let someone
else. Here's the thing about this, Lou. Here's the thing. First of all, thank you so much for the kind words. Really nice. But here's the thing about this, which is I hear you. I do. Like, you look at him and go, man, 165, he can't, like, he's not going to be a high-volume guy. You're going to take him there? But what do teams fall in love with? Who are the guys that always do this? Joe, you pointed this out the other day. It's speed. This guy broke the all-time record at the Combine. I do believe someone will do it. I don't know if it'll be the Bills, but someone was going to say,
that's right.
I just got to have that speed, right? That's the guy that always happens with.
So I would just say to that, Aaron Maven was an example of that, was he not? And there was still a GM out there that bid on that and took a guy. And I hope that a GM does that and bites on this guy. I just don't think he's an NFL. He's their second rounder, whatever. But trading up for this guy in the first round, I just don't see it.
Would you be okay with him at 28 for the Bills?
No.
Okay.
I don't think. You're I understand what you the argument you made about punt returns. We've had a couple of small punt returners and kickoff returners. They've lasted for a couple of good plays.
Hey, and then
have gotten creamed.
It's a great argument, Lou. I don't want to cut you off. Thank you. I'm going to get to some other callers and let Joe talk about this because it's a great. It is a good back and forth about Worthy. Although I think Lou, you are diminishing what he's done in college, comparing him like an Aaron Maben or something like that. But I totally understand the point about lasting in the league.
Yeah, I get that too. I'll say this though. I saw a good tweet about this morning, and it was coupled with like a 2-minute video of certain routes that Worthy ran. That he almost—it's almost the opposite of what Brandon Bean once said, which was that he would root for guys at the combine to run a slow 40 so that their draft capital might drop and then they could get him. I saw this take this morning, and I don't know if I fully agree with it, but I get the logic, which is Worthy maybe even did himself harm by running the fastest 40 time ever. And the take basically was, and the video coupled with it was, look at the routes this guy's running. He is not a one-trick pony. He is not a guy that just runs straight ahead. He's not all about the 40 time. He gets open. He runs a bunch of routes really well. He runs a pretty much a full route tree. The thing that he did not include that I would, which is what makes me hesitant about him, is he's horrible against press coverage. Like, there's one spot you really just cannot line him up. But he does have a lot else other than just running straight ahead and flying by a guy. I saw someone else compare him this morning to he's like a dirtier John Ross. Ross, who went in the top 10, like, Ross was prototypical, super fast 40, runs the go routes. And basically this was saying that Worthy's doing other stuff. He's not big. He's not great at taking big hits because he's smaller, but he's making you miss in space. He's running the slant. He's running that quick out on third and three. Like, he's doing this stuff at Texas. He is being used in other ways than just running down the field. He's being used on gadget plays. So I almost feel like he ran that 40. Everybody got an idea of what he is just based on that number. And there might be a little bit more of a complete player there than we're giving him credit for.
Let's go to Michael all the way down in Miami. He wants to chime in on Xavier Worthy. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, how's it going, Sal? Thanks for having me on.
Good, thanks.
At first I was a little skeptical of Xavier Worthy, thinking he's a little undersized and all for the position. But I don't know. I find myself comparing him a lot to Devontae Smith from the Eagles. Him coming out of college was really undersized. I remember back then a lot of people were talking about his size in the NFL. But kind of like Worthy, he's got a pretty complete route tree, and he's quite the football player, and I think he'd fit the team pretty well and add some good speed.
But yeah, Devontae, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off if you wanted to say something else, but
Devontae, thin.
I mean, I don't know. Literally, his nickname is the Slim Reaper,
yeah.
Right?
Right, literally.
Think about that. But he, I don't remember. I'd have to look up his 40 time, Devontae, but he's not Worthy.
He's
fast.
He was different in that, like, I mean, he won the Heisman, right?
Yeah.
Like, he won the Heisman Trophy.
He's more of the silky smooth guy that they would talk about.
Yeah.
Like, that was Devontae Smith.
He was drafted just on, like, you were the best wide receiver in college football. Like, I'm sure he could have ran anything at the 40, and he still would have went in the first round just because of how much he produced at Alabama. He ran a 4.54. So, that in that way, it's very different than Worthy. I mean, he wins in other ways. But I don't mind the comparison because one of the concerns about Worthy is, hey, 170, can you take on 100-plus targets in a season? Well, Smith's one example. Even though I know he's winning in different ways, he's 172 pounds, and he gets over 100 targets every year.
Let's go to Rob in Connecticut. More on Worthy. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, what's going on, Sal? Happy belated birthday. I know it's a little late. And hey, Joe, what's going on? Always love you guys, and thanks for being my eyes, as always. I absolutely loved your idea at 28, Worthy, because of what you did say about him. But he would be our cheetah. I always got tired of watching Kansas City with Tyreek Hill. He would be our Tyreek Hill. I love the fact that he'd be our returner as well. But if we do trade up, a doomsday all day, that's what I want. I think he would definitely be a great fit. But I like the Worthy. I would not be disappointed at all because we would have the speed. And I'm looking forward to it. Joe, have a great time at the draft party tonight. I don't know if you're going, Sal. I would be there in spirit thinking about you guys. And you guys have done a tremendous job on this whole draft thing. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, thanks, yeah, Rob. Sal, I'll have more serious matters to attain to, but we'll have as much fun as we can. It'll be guys, we're gonna have a lot of people. 4,000 slices of pizza. Let's go.
Woohoo!
We did the math.
Joe, what's the could I go from One Bills Drive over to you guys and then back to One Bills Drive? Like, what's the time frame there? Like every 20 minutes? I mean, I'd only miss a few picks driving, right?
You probably could make it back and forth.
Yeah, I could do it.
You would be risking, of course, Bean screwing you up. Yes. By Sal's in the car on his way. He's just arising. Oh, no, Bean's traded up to 13.
I mean, if he does trade up and then goes, then I'll join you guys later.
That's true, too.
I'll wrap it up. Because like, the Bills aren't trading. Look at.
No, they're not trading.
That was the thing.
Up.
There was a discussion. There was a discussion in our house yesterday. My wife's like, okay, what time are they going to pick? I'm like, 11:30 if they stay. She's like, well, what if they trade up? And then do you stay the whole round? I'm like, well, yeah, technically, I still got to work the whole rest of the round. But honestly, like, once that happens, the Bills aren't trading back into the first round. They won't have the capital to do it.
No, they
trade up.
Man.
They're that's it. The night's over for them.
Right. They already are limited because they don't have a third. But yes. If they trade whatever they have to do, the trade that you described to get a Dunze, they don't have their first. They don't have 28 anymore, obviously. They don't have 60. They don't have their first next year. Like, unless you're trading away, there's nothing. There's nothing you're trading away. You're not getting back in the first.
No, the Bills don't have, the Bills have good draft capital in this round. They don't have a third. And Joe, I got to tell you, now I understand when Bean said at the owners' meetings about how not getting that third round comp and instead getting a fourth round comp was a major blow and it really kind of screwed them up. I'll tell you that going through the exercise of what to trade, that was really big for me, them not having that third. And I'm like, wow, like, it really, you could get so much more done with a third than a fourth if you're going to trade up. And now I really understand. When I look at the numbers, and I have, for example, I'm like, okay, what would it take for the Bills to move up to, you know, LA Rams at 19? I'm like, oh, yeah, that third rounder is pivotal. Oh, wait, they don't have one. So now you go to the fourth, and then you got to give something else on top of that because you don't have the third. That's why it's a really big deal, and I totally understand that now for sure. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back. You're calling your shot. We're asking you to do it. When we come back, we'll still take more of your phone calls. We're also going to have Michael Nanya on. He is the host of the Odyssey podcast, Cool Your Jets. What are the Jets going to do at number 10? It's draft day here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you're Buffalo and you've gotten so close, taking over the AFC, but you can't beat Mahomes and the Chiefs, can't do it when it matters. So you've gotten that close. Why not go all in to try to do it? I don't know that a pick at 28 overall is going to be the difference for them. I think now's the time. You know that you're going to be picking late in the first round every year because you have Josh Allen and you have a good coaching staff that's always going to put a good defense out there. How valuable is next year's pick number 28 or 29 overall? If you could take this year's first, next year's first, and get a Roma Dunze in the top 10 potentially. I think Buffalo is one of the few teams, really, where you could make that argument.
Matt Miller right there. That was Matt Miller, right, Josh? That was Matt Miller right there. He's one of the kind of big voices now in the industry, and he's kind of risen up. It's been great to see. Joe, have you noticed there's no Todd McShay? Have you noticed that this year? He's in a contractual situation where he can't really be anywhere because of his contract with ESPN and how all that works and him not being on.
I thought about him the other day for a second, like, how come I haven't seen him on ESPN? But maybe he wasn't last year either. But I didn't know about that, know that he couldn't basically be anywhere. I'm looking at his Twitter now. Yeah, he doesn't have... There's no affiliation, at least in his bio, from what I'm seeing.
Right. Really interesting. He was such a big part of NFL draft coverage at ESPN, but it hasn't been. And he even wrote the other day, it's a contractual situation where he can't do that. But I thought about him when I was kind of thinking about all the different draft guys. Matt Miller right there. And of course, you can always hear everything we have going on at WGR at WGR550.com and on the Odyssey app. You can also check out the Cool Your Jets podcast with Michael Nania, who joins us right now on the Western Hotline to talk about the Jets. We're picking at number 10. Mike, it's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Exciting day, guys.
It is an exciting day. So I was thinking today and last night about, you know, what part of the draft would be interesting to talk to somebody. And I kept looking at the Jets because it just seemed like, Michael, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, for the last month or so it's been Brock Bowers. And then all of a sudden, the last 2 days, it's like, you know, wait a minute. I think they might take an offensive tackle. And how about if Roma Dunze gets there, they'll take him. How have you seen kind of the trends for the Jets here over the last couple of weeks or months?
Well, there have been a lot of conflicting rumors, reports, whatever you may see out there in terms of what they might do. The only thing that feels certain is that they're undoubtedly going offense, and it's going to be one of those three things you mentioned, either a wide receiver, Brock Bowers, or an offensive tackle. But exactly where they end up, who they might target, it still feels totally up in the air. And Bowers has been the clear favorite. I think if they do stay put at 10 and he's there, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see that just based on all the signs that we've been seeing. But one thing that has kind of been picking up, and Joe Douglas, the general manager, hinted at this a little bit when he had his press conference last week, has been the possibility of a trade-up for one of those top three wide receivers. Daniel Jeremiah had them trading up for Marvin Harrison in his March mock draft. He just put one out yesterday. He had them staying put at 10 and taking Odunze, so no trade-up. They had him falling there, which if that happens, I do think they would take Odunze in that situation over Bowers. But the wide receiver talk has been picking up. You know, the Jets signed Mike Williams, so they got that number two complement to Garrett Wilson, but they still are very lacking in depth after that. And Williams is only on a one-year deal. He's coming off an ACL injury, so he still has uncertainty. So receiver is still a very big need for them, as much as the offensive line depth is. So I think wide receiver is definitely something that's picked up. But Bowers is still very much the betting favorite, the in-house favorite. Peter Schrager had him mocked to the Jets, and he's been spot on predicting the Jets in recent years. So Bowers I would still consider the favorite, but receiver trade-up still in play, tackle still in play, a lot of different ways they could go.
So given that you kind of mentioned the trade-up part of it, if one of those top three receivers, and it would probably be Odunze if one of them did, but if someone fell to 10, do you think they would run to the podium then to draft the receiver?
I do think so. I mean, it's hard to gauge what their Bowers interest, what their level of interest in him truly is. I know he's the betting favorite and has been the overwhelming mock draft favorite, but it's just been hard to get a read on what they are really looking at doing, because for the most part, since Joe Douglas has been the general manager, their draft kind of, where they're leaning in the draft has been difficult to read leading up. Last year they drafted an edge rusher at 15. Everyone thought it was going to be offensive line. When they drafted Sauce Gardner top four in 2022, most people were thinking edge or offensive tackle there. So they've kept it pretty tight to the vest. So I'm not sure exactly how they feel about Bowers, despite him being the favorite. But from my perspective, I do think that if one of those guys fell to number 10, I do think they would run that up, even with Bowers.
What about
there, because of the positional value difference.
Sorry about that. What about the offensive tackle stuff? Do you buy into, you know, this could be a spot for them? This is a good offensive tackle draft, especially near the top. There seems to be a lot of momentum building for a run on that group. What would be the chances you think they grab somebody? And do you think they would like anybody over another from what you've been hearing?
I think it's in play. The Jets fill out their starting five in the free agency and trade market. They got Morgan Moses. They obviously signed Tyron Smith, John Simpson at left guard. So they have their starting five, or at least one that you could throw out there in place. But the depth behind them is very poor. And Moses and Smith, neither of them are signed beyond this year. So they have a long-term hole. They need depth. Smith is very injury prone, so you expect him. It's very likely he's going to miss multiple games. So they do have a need for both long-term and short-term, because you expect these guys are going to miss games, to protect Aaron Rodgers. So I think that's very much in play as well. I think they would prefer the pass catcher, whether it's Bowers, just because of where he probably would rank on their overall board, or the wide receiver, just that being something you could slide in more easily in terms of year one having a role instead of being a backup. So I would think they would lean towards that. But if, you know, let's say the receivers aren't there at 10, or they don't love Bowers or the positional value as much as people might think, I think offensive tackle is very much an option for them at number 10 if they stay there. Or if they trade back a few spots, I think they could still take one of those top five or so tackles on the board. I'm not sure exactly who they might lean towards, but definitely I could see them pursuing that position.
It's not going to happen, but it would be the funniest thing to ever happen, right, if they picked a quarterback at 10?
I mean, Joe Douglas said he wants to be a quarterback factory, right?
Yeah, he did say that. He was very explicit when he was speaking last week. He wants to be quarterback factory. So, hey, I mean, it looks like it's working out for Green Bay. But, yeah, I highly, highly, highly doubt it.
The Jets do not have a second-round pick. How does that impact what they might want to do after number 10? Would even a trade down be possible to pick up a little extra capital? Or are they just, we got to get a guy now because this regime needs to win? We have Aaron Rodgers. How would you see all that playing out?
Well, I think one of the biggest ways it affects it right now is that it definitely hurts their ability to trade up because, you know, with the talk increasing that they might want to get one of those top receivers, whoever falls between Neighbors or Odunze, not having a second round pick definitely hurts your ability to do that. So they might have to give up a future pick, which I'm not sure they would care too much about doing that because, like you said, this regime, it's about right now. Joe Douglas isn't coming back. Robert Saleh isn't coming back if they don't meet the expectations this year. So I don't think if they really do want to trade up, I don't think they'd hesitate to trade a future pick. But that's definitely something they'll have to do if they want to make a serious trade up move. But in general, Joe Douglas has been more of a trade back guy, a mass picks type of GM than a trade up guy. So I do think they will, if they stay at 10, they will explore a trade down. If someone wants to come up for a tackle, maybe a quarterback still there. I do think they will explore that and try to recoup that value as much as they can. But yeah, I think primarily it really does feel like the trade up is something that is heating up, and not having that second round pick will affect that.
All right.
All right.
Michael Nanya. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, what about Rodgers and all of this? I mean, is there any talk at all about him being involved in the process other than what you would normally expect from a quarterback? What would you think he would like at this point? The line, of course, I'm sure would come up, but maybe receiver, something, right? Offensively, I'm guessing would be what his preference would be.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like he's had much influence or input from what we've heard this year. I mean, obviously last year there was a decent amount of influence. They got quite a few former Packers players in the offseason. This year they have not gotten any former Rodgers teammates. Doesn't seem like he's had a ton of influence besides, you know, just the team doing what they should do and supporting him with, you know, emphasizing offensive line, receiver. So it's definitely going to be Aaron Rodgers will be in mind when they make the pick, whether it's a weapon for him or protecting him, but it doesn't seem like he has a ton of influence. But from his perspective, what would he prefer? I think for him it would be protection from the offensive line because it's after how last season went, I think he would want as much security as he could get to be sure that he could stay out, because I think he has the confidence that he can make it work with whatever weapons are out, and he already has Garrett Wilson, has Breece Hall, Mike Williams is there. So he has enough to work with to the point where as long as he's upright, I think he feels like he can get the job done. So that would be my guess, but it doesn't – we really haven't heard anything about Rodgers' input on this process.
Michael Nanya, you can follow him on Twitter /X at Michael_Nanya. He's the co-owner and host of the Cool Your Jets podcast via Jets X Factor. And, Mike, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks a lot. Enjoy today and enjoy tonight, man.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right, you got it. That is Michael Nanya. Speaking of tight ends, Joe, I put out the call for people to say, call your shot, call us, put it on social. And I've had several people tweet me at Sal Sports, trade Dawson Knox as part of a package to move up. The Bills aren't trading Dawson Knox. It would cost them way too much money. They just restructured his contract. It almost guarantees him even more so to be here over the next 2 years. And Dawson Knox, I don't think, is the type of player that gets you where you need to go necessarily. He's not a premium position. Maybe a team needs a tight end, but I just looked at it. Next year, even, despite this year, next year it would cost them $12 million in dead cap and only save $1.5 million.
Yeah, it feels like if you wanted to move Knox in a deal, then you couldn't have also traded Diggs. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you could have done this if they had not traded Diggs. But I think now that they've done that, it makes it hard. And I'm with you where I don't really think he gets you much. You know, like, who... He's a fine tight end, but... Does somebody want him on that contract? Like, maybe they would take him on the contract, but I don't think they'd be seeking it out.
All right, Max and Brandon, hold on. We just had a guest. We'll get right to you as soon as we come back. We'll do that. We'll let you call your shot here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It's draft day on WGR. All right, let's get back out to the phone lines. Max has been waiting patiently down in Charlotte. Thanks, Max. We appreciate you holding. Call your shot, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks. Hey, so really quick, back to the trade-up talk. I love Adunze. I'd love to get him. But I just want to say, we look at the blueprint, obviously, with Kansas City. People have been saying this. You know, they took Rashee Rice last year at 55. They stuck with who they had. They didn't really have that prototypical number one. And we move on from Diggs. I think it's as obvious as ever. They don't really need or want to necessarily risk it all for this number one guy. They think they have their quarterback that can make all the plays, right? We think we have them. So we know if we stick where we're at, we're going to get a guy regardless. So in my move, I would just move back a little bit. We know there's still going to be a receiver between probably, you know, 32 to 40 that we can get. If we can move right in that little sweet spot, there's still going to be Leggett, Franklin, maybe McConkey. I don't know. I don't know if that's the guy we want, but we want a guy to stretch the field, and I don't think Bean's willing to give up, you know, next year's first to move up for Adunze. That's where I'm at.
What are you getting to move back into that sweet spot?
I'm not sure. I don't know if we can get a – I mean, I think we can get a third, actually, for moving back 10 spots. I think we can get a third. He gets a third back, and then we, you know, hopefully one of those guys falls. I think they like Franklin. They met with him a lot. Okay. They met with – they had a private workout or whatever with Leggett, they said. So.
Yep.
These are guys that can stretch the field, and that's what we need.
If
they did that, Max, I would like to double dip too, Joe. Like Leggett,
yep.
McConkey, like guys who are there. Pearsall, I like a lot. Javon Baker, third round. Like if you get an extra third, you do something like that. Like I'm on board with that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
If they can get a third round pick out of it, I'm into it. Double dipping and going in and adding a third round pick, I'm very into that idea. I have zero interest in them trading out of the first round, though, if they're only getting a day three pick that they already have nine of. Like, to me, that is just repetitive. You've got it already. I don't know why you'd be moving back. There's rumors out there that New England wants to move back into the first round from the 32nd pick. If New England calls you up and says, hey, we want to move up five spots, or they're not 32nd, they're 34th. So they want to move up six spots. By the value chart, that's like a late fourth. And they have an early fourth. So, okay, we'll give you the third pick or of the fourth round, which is actually above the value chart that we'd be giving up. I'm telling them, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. I've already got a bunch of day three picks.
Thanks, Max. We appreciate the thought on that. Let's wrap it up with Brandon. Brandon, you got the last call of the hour.
Hey, Sal, Joe. Love the show.
Thank you, buddy.
Unfortunately, Max kind of stole my thunder there, but my shot call tonight is I don't think they pick tonight. I think you guys are pretty spot on tonight that I think there's going to be an Xavier-worthy effect, and that I think he's going to go a lot higher than people think, and that's going to cause the Bills to be unable to move up. I think somebody's going to take him probably in the top 15, and then somebody's going to panic take Brian Thomas before the Bills can get up. So my shot call tonight is they're going to trade down to the early second round tomorrow and double dip tomorrow at receiver, because I think they'll come up from 60 and come out with two of a Franklin, Leggett, or Ladd McConkey.
Great. I'm okay with it, Brandon. I think there's so many good, really good quality receivers that can help this team that if that's their choice, then, I mean, I could totally understand it. Joe, I'm laughing a little bit here with people talking about trade down, and he says they're not going to pick tonight. And part of the reason I'm laughing is I'm thinking about you and Jeremy tomorrow morning, what the show sounds like if they don't draft today. Tonight.
If they trade out and we have a party for this night and they don't pick, I mean, it will be deflating on that front. That's for sure.
But at least you go the whole night. Like, if they trade up, the party's kind of over in a sense.
Kind of.
That makes sense, right?
Well, no, because
if
then
they go the whole night, everybody's just partying all
but
night.
But if they trade up, then it's a two-hour celebration of what they've done.
That's true.
They trade out, like, there's nothing to, I mean, you could celebrate them getting another third. I guess that would be the case. By the way, he's not even saying, Max, I guess that he loves, I guess he's saying that too. But he's predicting that they won't pick tonight. I will defend trading down if they get a third, but I'm not predicting they do that. Bean, am I right about this, Sal? The only time I can remember him trading down in a meaningful round was when he did it twice for James Cook. And I think maybe the reason we all remember that is because it might be the only time they've ever done it.
I think you might be right about that. For Bean, that's right, because McDermott obviously was 2017 before Bean got here in that draft. But you're right, I think Bean. Look, Bean has traded up 4 out of 6 times that he's been the general manager in the first round for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, that's just the body of evidence is there that this is what he does and he's looking to do. But again, I go back to last week. He said they really liked a deal they had on the table for a trade down last year. They were going to do it. But it just got to a point where Dalton Kincaid got to a spot where they couldn't resist going up and getting him. That's what makes it so intriguing. Our guy Emery Hunt's going to join us. We love talking with Emery. He's got his huge publication, his draft guide that's out. Today's your last day. Not the last day to get it, but last day might be really meaningful head leading into the draft. Then you could still get it and read about a lot of the guys after they get drafted. But, you know, he's just really on top of things and can kind of sort all this out. I find it interesting, I believe, and I'll ask him about this. I believe he has Roma Dunze as his number one wideout. We'll get his thoughts on that and why that is. Emery Hunt, Football Game Plan, CBS Sports HQ, up next on the Extra Point Show, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, rolling along here on draft day 2024, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Joe, when I was going through some of the scenarios for a trade up and, you know, what it would cost, and I kept saying, no third rounder. And I kept getting to, well, they'd have to go up next year's second rounder. That second rounder next year is really interesting because maybe the Bills trade it tonight and they use it to move up. But also, we're really going to root hard against the Minnesota Vikings in Buffalo this year. I mean, if the Vikings are bad, like, that pick could be in the mid-30s.
Yeah. It will be probably in the top 10, right? Well, you never know, though. There are times where you think a team's going to be bad, and then they end up being a little bit better than you thought.
Like the Texans last year, by the way.
Yeah. The Cardinals probably, or not the Cardinals. The Cardinals. They had the Texans' first-round pick, don't they? They probably thought they were getting, like, a top-5 pick when they did that, and then it ended up being, like, in the 20s.
Yeah, that's right. What's Arizona got? 4 and then 27.
Right.
All right, we're going to welcome in now our good buddy Emery Hunt on the Wester Hotline, of course, CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. He's got his draft guide out. We talk with you before the draft, during the draft process, and here we are the day of the draft, Emery. Thanks for coming on. It's Sal and Joe here in Buffalo again.
Appreciate you guys always bringing me on, man.
Yeah, you got it. Listen, I mean, I cover the NFL every day for a living. I follow a certain team. I'm on the radio every day. I'm a beat reporter. I'm on the sidelines, but specifically for the Buffalo Bills. You kind of do it, you know, all-encompassing, and the draft is kind of your thing. It's been your thing for a long time. So for a guy like me, so laser-focused on the Bills, it's one thing. But what's it like for you to get to this day? What is today like for you and the culmination of what the last year has been?
You know, what's interesting, as you asked that great question, is kind of like, you know, today really is the start. But for someone like myself that dives deeper into the draft, really, I get excited about day 2 and day 3 because that's where your team is made. That's where the real scouting happens. Right now, I feel like day 1 is all pop and circumstance. You know, it's just kind of like we have a general idea of what's going to happen, who's going to be selected. There's not a lot of surprise this year, and there hasn't been a lot of intrigue, to be completely honest, about what's going to happen at the top. We kind of have an idea, but for someone like myself, it's really about days two and three and that quote-unquote eighth round that really happens after the draft ends, when the chaos happens with the undrafted free agents.
Well, I was looking at some of your stuff, and we always refer to and think about that 2018 draft, and I know you liked Lamar Jackson above all the other quarterbacks, and here he is, a two-time MVP. And you've never been afraid, never been shy to say you like a guy. I think last year you had Jahmyr Gibbs over Bijan Robinson, if I remember correctly. And then this year, it's Rome Odunze over the top receivers, right? I mean, you can correct me on all of that, but I believe that's where you've landed. That's why I think it's fascinating to talk to you, because you take a look at it from a different perspective. You're not going to be swayed by what other people think. What's your feelings on Rome Odunze and why you have him rated so highly?
You know, you're right on all aspects, but with the receiver, it's always unique because Rome Odunze is my number one X, and my number one Z receiver is Malik Nabers. Now, okay, my number one slot is Ladd McConkey. And when you look down at my number two Z, is Keon Coleman. My number three Z is Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, here's the thing. People will say that and say you hate Marvin Harrison Jr., but I have Pro Bowl grades on all of those guys. A.D. Mitchell is my number two X, Pro Bowl grade on him, as well as on Xavier Worthy. So, to me, I look at it like this class is so elite, to where you can get a guy that can help your team out significantly as a rookie. But for Odunze, why he's topped out as my number one X, is the fact that everything he does is just so smooth and easy. And that's an extreme level of confidence. It's an extreme level of skill. And it just jumps out at you on tape. So when you talk about guys like that, or like you brought up Lamar Jackson or Jahmyr Gibbs, when I look at those type guys, I see those guys as not being scheme dependent or team dependent. You could drop them anywhere and they'll perform.
In terms of where the Bills would have to be coming from, is he, given what you just said about him, if Odunze is there at 9 or 10, is he that good to you where he's worth like multiple first round pick and maybe even more than that type of trade up?
Listen, and this is going to sound weird to say for someone that had a two-time MVP is his number one overall quarterback in 2018, but no one player is that good. I'm not giving up that much to go get one dude when you need 53 to really win. Especially in this class where I just outlined a bunch of good receivers, yeah, I like Odunze. He's nice. He's my number one next, but I'd be damned if I give up future assets to go up and get one dude when we need multiple on a football team.
Even with a team with a ready-made quarterback who's, you know, fighting for an MVP every year in a Super Bowl window, who just needs that X receiver who's ready, you know, right there with the Kansas City Chiefs, basically. Even for a team like that, you think it's just way too much to do?
Only if your roster looks like the Cleveland Browns, where else are you going to put guys on the roster? Their depth chart is stacked within the two deep. There's really no room, right? Buffalo has a lot of room to add guys. So if I can get two talented wide receivers that can help me out, maybe I could double up and get back into round one and select two receivers at the back end of round one, as opposed to trading up those assets to go get one. Because I feel like the Bills can use multiple receivers, so I wouldn't want to give up a chance, especially in this draft class, to go and get one dude.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Joe.
You just mentioned you had A.D. Mitchell as your number two X receiver. He is the player that is the most mocked to the Bills. If he is the pick, or I guess just in general, him as a prospect, like what you see from him on tape, how he measured, and also how much attention do you pay to, there's just questions, right, about Mitchell that are out there about like effort stuff, and I don't know, like there just seems to be a lot of noise, like extra noise when it comes to his evaluation.
You know, I block out all that and just focus on the film. And the film tells me he's a lot like CeeDee Lamb, where he doesn't have to only win deep down the field. You can throw him a football on a hitch route. He could turn around and make things happen after the catch. And he's looking to score the ball when he has it in his hands. And you know, me and my homeboys, my former college teammates, we have a group chat going, and we kind of like laugh at certain things where if we're watching the game collectively and we see the quarterback is the issue, he's like, man, I would have hate to have played for this dude because, man, we would have had to fight in the huddle. And that's what you saw on film for A.D. Mitchell. A lot of times he's open. It's not his fault he can't get the football. And one thing I always wanted to point out with him was in that game against Washington, you saw one play where he was open, and it was a crucial situation inside the red zone, and he's looking back to the sideline like, hey, man, get me the football. Like, I'm open. Throw it to me. The next play they go to him, touchdown. That's the type of guy you want out there, and that's the type of controlled aggressiveness you want. Someone that understands, hey, I got this dude beat like a drum. Get me the football, and let's try to tie this game or take the lead. And it's that type of leadership, kind of like Dez Bryant was. You know, he's calling for the football because he knows he has the matchup and he has it won. And I feel like A.D. Mitchell has that same type of mindset that I could live with.
Every time I think about wide receivers, I think about Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott talking about explosive plays, rack, guys with balls in the ball in their hands, what they can do. Sean McDermott talked a lot about the game has changed. You need guys who can be explosive from anywhere on the field, not just over the top. And that's why in my mock, without trades, I have Xavier Worthy going to the Bills at 28, Brian Thomas Jr. off the board already. But there are questions about his size. How do you see it? 165 pounds, but obviously a dynamic guy who broke the combine record in the 40.
Well, listen, you know me. Size is not a skill, and you can't hit what you can't catch. You can't hurt what you can't touch. You know, if you're that fast, you got to catch me first before you can hurt me. And someone like Worthy does a great job of winning deep down the field. I saw a comp earlier today that I kind of agree with. It makes a lot of sense. It was like T.Y. Hilton, similar stature. And if weight is the biggest concern, like, listen, we can add weight on you. We can get you big. You know, that's not a problem. And I like the fact that he has gotten better this year as opposed to last year. Last year, I was like, wow, he's kind of a liability out there, especially against Alabama. In the Alabama game, we had those crucial drops. But this year against Alabama, he was able to right some wrongs. He became much more consistent catching the football. So it shows you it was a focal point for him in the offseason. He worked on it, got better, became more of an asset and not a liability. So the size doesn't worry me because you can put him out in space. You can put him on the move. You can keep him off the line of scrimmage and create those explosive plays for him. And I think he's going to be a fantastic receiver, whether you want him on the inside as a slot or as a Z receiver where you kind of can put him on the move.
When it comes to the other receivers that are more fringe, like late first, early second, the Leggett territory, Franklin, others, is there another name that you think could sneak into the first round?
Troy Franklin, I mean, the explosiveness and the first step quickness reminds me so much of a Ted Ginn and how he's able just to explode off the ball. And what I like about Franklin is the fact that he's another one that tracks the ball rather well. So you think about pairing him up with those space bombs that Josh Allen likes to throw, you really can't outthrow Troy Franklin because he's going to track without losing speed, puts his hands up at the last possible moment to make the grab. And so that's someone that would pair up perfectly with the Josh Allen. You brought up Brian Thomas. You know, I would love to see him in Buffalo because he's a big body guy that not only can win deep down the field and above the rim, we know that, but he is an underrated rack guy as well. You saw a lot of times we talk about neighbors and how well he was able to catch and run with the football. Thomas was just like that. A lot of times you see him on a low crosser, and he's weaving through the defense and getting to the end zone. So those two guys, to me, would be ideal fits in Buffalo.
Emory Hunt joining us here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, believe it or not, the Bills might actually take somebody other than a wide receiver, although that's all we've been focused on here for the last few months. If that happens, it's probably you're looking at edge, maybe interior defensive line, probably the likely two spots there. So let's talk about the edge, the guys you like. It doesn't seem to be a really deep class, but there's some nice guys at the top. Who would fit maybe down at 28 for the Bills that you would like to kind of see there if that's the case?
Well, if the NFL draft is doing the draft right, and I assume, you know, guys like Leatu Latu would be gone. Jared Verse would be gone. Dallas Turner would be gone. So now you're talking about, okay, the next tier of guy. I'm a big Jonah Ellis guy out of Utah. You can always sell me on, you know, defensive players coming from Utah, sight unseen. I don't care what their tape looks like. They're well-coached. They're good football players. You kind of want them on your defense. So he would be someone that I really just would love his game in Buffalo, because every time I watched him play, he was just, it's almost like he was offsides with how often he was in the backfield. I know he's not a first-round pick, potentially, but Mo Kamara out of Colorado State is another one of those type of guys like Ellis, where even if you had him as a situational rusher, hey, go in there and just get to the quarterback. That's what he does extremely well, was extremely disruptive on film. And Chris Braswell is a power rusher, but man, that and he's kind of one-dimensional as a rusher, but man, that one dimension is really doggone good because he has a long arm stab where he's walking offensive linemen back into the pocket and is able to close on the ball. It's almost like he's out there by himself and just a quarterback because he sees no trash. He sees no bodies. He is like RoboCop. He is razor-sharp focus on his target, and he's going to get to that target.
What about at the safety position? The class isn't seen as a great one, but the Bills do have, I would even say, a long-term need. They could definitely draft a rookie and start him, I think, too. But what do you think the prospects look of that hypothetical for them?
And let me piggyback on that. Do you see Cooper DeJean as a safety in the NFL? Because it seems like that's kind of the guy that plays the way he does that the Bills would love.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You think about what the Bills had with Micah Hyde and what they had in Poyer. All of those guys are kind of crossover type guys, right? Where you could they start at corner, then they'll move to the slot, then they'll end up being playing safety. So it kind of fits the mold of what they like. For Cooper DeJean, I'm kind of like, listen, man, I'm going to let you play corner until you prove you can't play corner. And until that happens, then we'll just leave you out there. But if it happens, then, hey, okay, we'll move you around the defense to utilize your football IQ. But safety, I think this is a good class for, guys that could do more than one thing. We're kind of seeing that now. I feel like this year it was harder for me to really designate free safety, strong safety, combo safety, because I feel like all of them are starting to blend together now to where it's not clear-cut and defined on, okay, this guy's only a free safety, only a strong safety, so on and so forth. So you look at someone like Marcus Banks out of Mississippi State, who was a starting safety for the Bulldogs but can play corner as well, can kick down in the slot. Thomas Harper out of Notre Dame, about 5'10", 180, can do both those things as well, but very good versus the run. A small school guy to keep an eye on, P.J. Jules of Southern Illinois. Terrific trigger off the short corner. Can blitz, can cover. And I know Saron Neal had a nice little career in Buffalo. How about we go back to Jacksonville State and look at Kobe Fuqua? He's a little bit older. He's a 25-year-old rookie. But this is someone that can play dime backer, strong safety. He can blitz, he can cover, has great football instincts, and has the ball skills to turn the ball over in the passing game.
Yeah, it's funny. Speaking of being a little bit older, and I know you're a big small school guy, how about Jared Verse from SUNY Albany to Florida State to the NFL in the first round?
Oh, listen, that's funny because he also played at Bloomsburg, if I'm not mistaken. Or there was another guy that played at Bloomsburg, just passed away, A.J. Simon, I'm sorry. He went from Bloomsburg to UAlbany. But yeah, UAlbany. And listen, Anton Kunjaj was the other end at SUNY Albany, and just transferred out to G5 program. So what's going on up there at Albany? Shout out to Greg, the head coach, who's done a fantastic job of just developing edge talent up there.
That's amazing, right? Hey, let's do non-Bills, because thankfully we don't have to talk about the quarterback anymore, Emery. We did that for way too long here in Buffalo. I just read Tom Curran tweet that the Patriots are probably locked in on Drake May at 3, unless the Vikings or Giants give him an offer they can't refuse. So Williams, Daniels, May. Is that how you see the top three going here?
If I was predicting, yeah, that's how I would see it, going. Because at the end of the day, man, teams is really, and if I could just be completely honest, I would only feel comfortable taking two quarterbacks in round one, early in round one. That's the top two. That's Daniels and also, Caleb Williams. Everyone else, you kind of can make a case for them being more of a mid to late first round, but definitely second round type picks or talents. But, we know how teams kind of overvalue quarterback and push them up the board. But if teams want to reset the market like they've done with every other position outside of the quarterback, they need to start doing it in the draft.
Yeah. What do you think New England should do at 3? I feel like that's kind of where the draft, even though no one really knows what they're doing at 2, Washington either. But for New England, it feels like everything's kind of on the table. So if you were them, quarterback, they could just draft Harrison or move down, I guess.
Yeah, and that, if I were in charge of New England, this is Emory Hunt, the GM of the Patriots speaking, I would definitely probably trade down maybe 2 spots, but I worry about the Cardinals. Otherwise, I would just take Harrison. Then I would double back and just trade either into the first round, the back end, or just at the top of the second round, take Spencer Rattler. So that way I get an elite player right there at receiver. It didn't take a guy that reminds me a lot of Baker Mayfield that has been battle-tested throughout his career and would be ready to go from day one without spending a premium pick on a guy that we may not think is an elite talent at the position. Why not just get the elite talent, the top five talent, and then take a quarterback that can help us win in round two?
All right, before we let you go, and then I'm going to let you promote your draft guide, you're the guy here that knows the deeper guys, the small school guys later in the draft. Brandon Bean actually has a nice history of wide receivers later. Khalil Shakir a couple years ago, obviously Gabe Davis in the fourth round several years ago. Give us a guy. If the Bills can get their hands on a guy, maybe the fourth round area, even a little bit later, you say, you know what? He's going to be able to play in this league and do some nice things. Wide receiver, that is.
I've been beating this drum for Kyle Sheets for forever, since seeing him last season and then watching his progression this year out of Slippery Rock. 6'3", 220, ran high 4.4, low 4.5 at Temple's Pro Day, can play inside or outside, terrific deep ball threat, can track the ball rather well, can go above the rim, was highly productive at Slippery Rock and had a great college gridiron showcase against FBS corners in competition. So that would be my day three gem this year. Last year, I was all over Colton Dowell out of UT Martin, who also starred at the college gridiron showcase. He ended up getting drafted in the seventh round by the Tennessee Titans. So I'm hoping Kyle Sheets follows suit because he is a terrific receiver.
I think you like Malachi Corley, too, if I remember right from the combine when I saw you.
Yeah, Corley, the receiver out of Western Kentucky, more of a that slot guy that can run with the ball. Also, John Giles of West Florida was a big fan of him too.
All right, I know that the draft guide's been out for a while, and anybody can get all the information. But it's even a great tool after the draft because you can learn about these guys that your favorite team drafted. So tell everybody all about the draft guide, how you go about getting it, where you can get it.
Absolutely, they can go to footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. This year, over 900 individual scouting reports. So every player in there has a scouting report. And if you've purchased the draft guide since 2020, right now you would have over 4,300 scouting reports in your hands as we speak. So it's the largest draft guide out there. All information, all filet, no fat, no list. It's all scouting reports. footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide.
footballgameplan.com. We always appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy today. I know it's a big day for you, so we appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
You got it. Emory Hunt right there. He knows his small school guys. You know, those where you find your gems, too, as he said, at wide receiver, right? I know he likes Malachi Corley a lot. A guy we haven't talked about a lot, Joe, is Javon Baker. Everybody I talk to likes Javon Baker. I think the question is, how much do teams really like him to take him maybe even in the second round? Or is he a third-round guy? When you get to the fourth round, it might be just staring you in the face.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He gets open a lot. What's the thing with him? He has big drop problems, I think. I mean, I'll have to look. But of the class, he was one of the higher, maybe even had the highest drop rate. Let's see, drop percentage. Yeah, he was over 10%.
Notice his average yards at catch were last year?
No.
And this isn't just on three or four catches.
Yeah.
21.9. He averaged 22 yards a catch with 52 catches.
Well, that makes me think of a thing that we used to say with Gabe Davis, right? Which is Davis had a higher drop rate, and it is the same school too, but Davis would run such deep routes that are lower percentage chance, the drop rate would be a little bit higher. And maybe that's an explanation for Baker too, because I'm looking right now, and he does, of all the guys, like Franklin's at 10%. Let me make sure nobody else. No, Baker's second. Jamari Thrash has the highest drop rate, but there's Baker right there, number two. Look, Odunze, right, by the way, the lowest at 3.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, geez, what did Emery just say? Odunze, he does everything so smooth. There's just nothing he doesn't do well, right? I mean, like everything he does, he's so smooth. You can drop him in any offense at any point. And he's just going to be a really good player for you. And that's why there's so much love for him. And it seems like even more love as we get closer to tonight. The draft starts tonight, 8 o'clock. We're going to have full coverage for you all day here. Of course, 7 o'clock tonight is when our draft coverage starts with Nate Geary and Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. I'm going to be down at One Bills Drive during that time. We'll have you fully covered here on WGR Sports Radio 550. In the meantime, we got a half hour left here on the program. A couple of things I want to do. I want to just walk through the division a little bit. Joe, you mentioned the Patriots. We had a Jets guest on. How about the Dolphins? Really interesting, some movement maybe on what the Dolphins might be thinking. And it might surprise some people where they may be leaning as well. And how about the trade scenarios? A couple more that I came up with that we'll see what your thoughts are here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Here's the thing. Minnesota, in my mind, is more desperate to get up there. Minnesota has more ammunition to get up there. Mm-hmm. But the Giants are within striking range of getting up there. So what, in the end, is more valuable? The more desperate team with more ammunition, or the team that's at six, to where the Patriots could go from 3 to 6 and still get the quarterback that they want if they're not leapfrogged at 4 or 5?
Okay, that is Adam Schefter. I'm with Rich Eisen. The basic premise there is the Giants and the Vikings are both trying to get up to number 3,
mm-hmm.
which obviously is the spot where New England holds. And obviously, Joe, if you're doing that, you're doing it for a quarterback. Right. Now, I think the consensus is Williams and Daniels will go 1-2. So if the Giants and Vikings are both trying to do that, are we sure they're trying to get Drake May? Could it be for J.J. McCarthy? Because it has to be for a quarterback. You're not trading with New England. I guess you could leave open the possibility the Giants are doing it to get their hands on Marvin Harrison Jr. before he goes to 4. You could do that too, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I would think, though, it's probably for a quarterback.
Right.
May, I really do wonder what will happen with him tonight. Maybe it'll just be that when the college football season ended, he's the second guy. And there was even like a week maybe where it was, are we sure he's not number one? And then everyone went, no, yeah, he's not number one. But it was like a conversation for maybe a minute. And as the draft season has gone on longer and longer, I think the picking apart of May's game has strengthened. And now, like, Daniels is the favorite to go to, but everyone's not even sure about that. And there's rumors that New England hates Drake May. Again, those are just like rumors, but there's just weird stuff with him. So maybe the draft shows up and he goes 2, like we thought he would all along at the outset of draft season. Or maybe he slides. Maybe McCarthy would be the guy that someone is trading up for. I tend to think it would be May. This also reminds me of, did you see the Daniel Jeremiah tweet from last hour?
I did not.
He tweeted, was asked this question, what is the wildest top 10 rumor you've heard? And he said one thing he heard was an outcome where Minnesota would trade up from 11 to 3 with New England and they would take Drake May. Then New England, who has just gone from 3 to 11, would trade back up from 11 to 4 with Arizona to draft McCarthy, and then Arizona would go from 11 to 5 and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. So the 11th pick would get passed around 3 times in the course of like a 10-minute span.
Didn't this kind of thing happen with Houston last year and how they finally ultimately positioned themselves where they were to get 2 picks?
Kind of. They didn't move out of 2, though. They just, what did they do? They had a second first, maybe that was at like 10, and they drafted Stroud at 2, and then they traded 10 or whatever that pick was, and then this year's first to move up back up to 3. So they ended up picking second and third.
Yes, that's what. And by the way, the only person who had that, I remember, is Daniel Jeremiah.
Okay.
Daniel Jeremiah is the only person I remember last year who, in his final mock that day, he's like, I got Houston picking second and third. And I'm like, that's kind of wild. Like, it's really kind of oddly specific. And it happened. So when Daniel Jeremiah talks, I kind of pay a little bit more attention now, right? And he actually has his final mock, and he has the Bills at 28 taking Brian Thomas Jr. So does Charles Davis, by the way, who I think is very plugged into the league. So we'll see what happens there. Now, I have at WGR550.com several different trade scenarios for the Bills trading up. And you can check those out, and we can talk about them. But we've also talked about them trading down. One thing I keep thinking about, and I wonder, and I've actually gone back and tried to see if this has happened, Joe. If a team wanted to move back into the first round, if there's a team who says, look, we really like the way the board's falling. We're sitting here in the second, or we're sitting here, we're not picking again until the second, or maybe the third. We got to get back up. What's the most the Bills could get to move out of the first round, right? And is it possible you could even get next year's first rounder from a team? I don't think so.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't think so. I think that's too much. But what I did find was this. In 2019, Indianapolis was picking 26th, not 28th. I get it. 26th. Washington came up from 46. They came up 20 spots.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave him next year's second rounder to do it.
Okay. So a late, well, mid second rounder and a future second rounder to get into the late first?
Yes. Now, yeah. I think that might be a little too late for the Bills to want to go back if they were to go into the mid 40s.
Yeah.
But boy, if they walked out of tonight and had 3 second rounders next year, you'd be like, holy cow. Like they,
yeah.
3 picks in the top, you know, I don't know, 50.
I really want them to use one of those seconds to get Brandon Ayuk.
Four picks that'd be. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh man, the contract he would come with though, you'd have to give him.
I know. I'm open to that though. Like I'm not against that as an idea for them. And I guess there was a thing up. There's so many, you know, there's so much trade wins to keep track of, draft wins to keep track of this morning. But there was something about Ayuk and how, I mean, this is probably true. I mean, if it's out there that the Niners want a first round pick for Ayuk, and he's still on the Niners, it would make sense that no one's offered him yet, because otherwise he wouldn't be on the team. But I wonder if they have to settle. I wonder if they have to make a decision. Like, okay, it's draft day. Nobody's offering us a first-round pick. So, because of the contract, right? And because of the class. The class is so deep, it might be harder to trade Brandon Ayuk when you have so many options in the draft. So, do the Niners get to a spot today where they sit down and say, we have to make a decision. Do we want to pay this guy? Do we want to go into a lame duck year where he could be unhappy and we risk, you know, making it ugly and maybe even losing him for nothing at some point? Or C, do we take the second round pick plus? Because if the price drops because they realize no one's making the offer they want, now I'm even more interested. If I can get him for a second round pick and something on top of that, maybe a fourth, maybe something a little more than that, and I've got the extra second I got from Diggs, I almost feel like I'm swapping Diggs for Ayuk there, which I know the money will be there. It was for Diggs too, but I'm getting Diggs 6 years younger or 5 years younger, and that really, really appeals to me.
So here are a couple other trade possibilities I came up with teams that might want to do it. And what it would cost Joe based on previous trades and the draft chart. The Rams at 19. We already talked, by the way, about the trade up all the way to number 9 for the with the Chicago Bears. Let's talk. Okay, you know what? Let me do this. Let me go to 12. I have one with 12 here. Now, 12 would depend on, this may depend on which guy you're getting, because you could, if Roma Dunze is gone, you're getting Brian Thomas probably at 12, I guess would be the target. But maybe Roma's there at 12, and he is there. This is what it looks like to me from what I've seen. The Bills would have to give up 28, they'd swap there, a fourth, and next year's first. Would you do it?
One more time for me.
You'd to go to 12.
Yeah.
They'd have to give up, obviously, their first, also a fourth, and next year's first.
And that's,
would you do it, and would it only have to be for Odunze?
It would have to be for Odunze. Yeah. I do not want to give up a first-round pick next year to go get Brian Thomas. I like Brian Thomas a lot, and I think he might be the most likely pick. But I do not want to trade multiple firsts for him.
Okay, well, in this next scenario, you wouldn't have to, but would this sit well with you? If it's 16 and Brian Thomas is there and the Bills say, let's go up, we're going to get him at 16, Seattle's there. What I have is the Bills would have to get to 16, give up 28, obviously. The Bills would also get a fourth rounder in this draft, so they'd get 16 and a fourth. But in return, they'd have to give up their second this year and a second next year.
Okay.
So what, 28 and a 2, and next year's 2 for 16 and a 4 for Brian Thomas.
Okay. I'm more interested. I'm kind of starting to like the idea of him just falling to 28, though. I'm starting to more and more.
You know, the issue here, though, is the only problem is if they give up 60, Joe,
yep.
If the Bills give up 60, when are they picking again?
They're not picking until the fourth round.
Right.
They're not picking again until the fourth round, which... you know, you'll have 9 day 3 picks. This is where the volume of picks, you hope that you hit on 3 of them. But yeah, you're not picking till round 4. And I would think that that would be very scary, I think. And, you know, maybe they would have Thomas that much higher. There are some that do. But I don't know. More and more you're seeing mocks where he's fallen till the end of the first round. You just mentioned Daniel Jeremiah has him falling to 28. So I'm starting to... My favorite idea for Thomas is you are trading like a 4th round pick and you're going up 3 spots. Like, to me, that is the ideal scenario in which they get Thomas. I would be hesitant to go big, even if you're not having to give up your 1st round pick next year.
Well, I think the most likely scenario there for me is, and I only go up to 20. I don't have him going up just a few spots. I have him going to the last one I did was going up to 20 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, 8 spots up. That's your scenario, but it would also require next year's 2nd. It would be a 4th this year and next year's 2nd. So if they get to 20, the Bills are sure he's going to not fall much farther. We got to get him now. Would you do that? Give up this year's 4th with the swap and next year's 2nd.
I could be convinced of that. Yes. I think I could be talked into that.
The Bills do have 2 seconds next year, obviously. One is the Minnesota Vikings, as we talked about. That might be what you have to use as your capital. That Vikings pick should be higher than what the Bills pick next year. In the meantime, the New England Patriots, we said draft and pick 3rd. They're scheduled for that. The Jets, we had a guest on earlier at 10. And then the Miami Dolphins are sitting there at 21. And there's a lot of buzz now, Joe, about the Dolphins in the wide receiver market. I don't know if you've seen this, but it looks like Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy. They want to replace the speed they eventually will lose with either Tyreek Hill and or Jalen Waddle as, you know, their contracts get to points where they got to make decisions.
Yeah, and I saw Omar Kelly and Alan Pupar talking on a podcast yesterday. They were talking how the Dolphins did not restructure the contract of Tyreek Hill this offseason, despite the fact it would have cleared a ton of room for them, and they could have maybe kept, maybe not Christian Wilkins, but they could have kept somebody else important that they lost because there were so many that they did. But they didn't. They didn't touch Tyreek Hill's contract, and Tyreek Hill has been on the record 1 year ago. He said on a podcast that his plan is to play out this contract, and after 2025, walk away. That's it. That's all I want to play. And if that were true, I do feel like the Dolphins would then have not acted on the contract. So maybe it lines up that Hill will play 2 more years. And if that's the case, I mean, isn't Mike McDaniel in an office right now going, man, I'm just give me Xavier Worthy. Give me Xavier Worthy.
Oh, okay, listen, I approach this from 2 ways, thinking about the Dolphins, okay? Number one is, yeah, I mean, boy, you know, I'll restate it this way. If the Dolphins take a wide receiver, that's one less for the Bills to take, which sucks. Okay, I wouldn't like it for that reason. They take Brian Thomas Jr., they take Xavier Worthy, it's one less receiver, it's one more off the board, okay, that really makes it harder for the Bills. But Joe, I got to be honest, go ahead, Miami. What? It's not like you can be any faster or have more weapons. Like, go ahead, where's he going to play? I mean, I know they had a couple injuries last year and that they had to deal with that, but Miami, if Miami takes Brian Thomas Jr. or Xavier Worthy, it does nothing to enhance them to me and what I feel about them.
Right. I hear that.
They already are who they are.
Yeah. I can't decide if I kind of, I guess I'm kind of neutral on it, right? Which I guess kind of means I'm not afraid of it. You're right. You've already got Hill. You've already got Waddle. I expect they're going to pay Waddle. So you add Worthy. I do think he'd help them right away. I think one area of depth they were severely lacking last year was when Hill was banged up and Waddle was missing time. They had nobody else to come in and pass the ball to. Like, they tried Chase Claypool at one point because they were so desperate. They didn't have much. So that would help them, but what did I just kind of describe? A depth role, right? Like, that's a team that has more holes than the Bills do on their roster this year.
So you got to get a guy who can play.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't doubt for a second that McDaniel would use Worthy and he would have big numbers. But to me, you are drafting a number 3 receiver with your 1st round pick, and you don't have a lot of draft capital in the first place. To me, you're making a luxury pick on a team that can't afford to be making luxury picks.
And they just had a whole big exodus on their defensive side of the ball. They have a brand new defensive coordinator. I have him actually going offense, taking Graham Barton, because I just think he fits for them. He's a really, really good player, flexible. Their offensive line was so decimated with injuries last year. He can play guard, he can play tackle, he can play center, he can do a lot of different things. That's why I have him. But man, they could be in the offensive tackle market, and why wouldn't they look at defensive line, the Miami Dolphins? I mean, they are a team that they lost Christian Wilkins, and you have Bradley Chubb coming off injury. You have Jalen Phillips coming off injury. So I, as much as I see this wide receiver stuff with Miami, I'm like, okay, I don't think that's smart. I guess, I mean, add another guy, a weapon, but that's not what you need, and you're in a position where you got to win right now. It's the NFL draft. It's so fun. It's the first day and night. Tonight, 8 o'clock, our coverage at 7 o'clock, but of course, all day here on WGR. We'll take one final timeout. We'll come back, and when we come back, it must be NHL playoff season because we have coaches talking about opposing teams' players. All right, last night in the NHL playoffs, the Maple Leafs, their fans were feeling very good about themselves about midway through the third period. They had tied up the game. Todd Bertuzzi scores. It's 2-2. The series is tied 1-1. Here we go. 28 seconds later, Brad Marchand scores. And that was the game winner because he scored again at an empty netter a little bit later. Joe, did you see their kind of their back and forth? I didn't even want to call it a dust-up. What was happening between Marchand and Bertuzzi last night?
Yeah. Yeah, I was, I think the TV was maybe even showing them for a minute and just in time showed the goal. And what are Leaf fans are upset that the whistle wasn't blown, basically.
Well,
and the coach said
not only
thing.
Leafs fans. Let's hear from Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe. This is what he said after the game for everybody's favorite guy to talk about, Brad Marchand.
In the league long enough, as you can see, he gets calls. It's unbelievable, actually, you know, how it goes. You know, we got to play through that. We got to play through that stuff. I don't think there's another player in this series that gets away with taking out Bertuzzi's legs the way that he does. There's not one other player in the series that gets away with that, but he does. It's an art, and he's elite at it.
It's an art, and he's elite at it. I mean, he is speaking the truth there, right?
He is. He's not mentioning that his guy on that play, Bertuzzi, is like the same exact thing. And gets away with stuff like that all the time. He punched a guy. Was it a saber? He punched a saber in the face, like, late in the season, and nothing happened. So, but he's also right. Like, that's definitely Marchand to a T.
Also, last night, the LA Kings in overtime beat the Oilers 5-4.
Yeah.
Anze Kopitar, great shot. I mean, how do you let that happen in overtime? He just kind of walked in a little bit, almost free, not quite. That happens in overtime. And then the Vegas Golden Knights, they win 3-1. They take a commanding 2-0 series lead over Dallas. How about Dallas? The number one team in the West could be out very quickly here.
And Vegas, who is the final seed in the Western Conference, is now the betting favorite to win the Western Conference.
Wow. Eichel had an amazing pass last night at 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Was it Marchessault who scored, I think, if I was watching
I believe that. I so, good, yeah. Yeah. And then Eichel had maybe the empty netter, goal and assist last night. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here we go again, watching Jack Eichel do his thing for Vegas. In the meantime, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, and, of course, the draft tonight. All right, here we go. It's here. We'll have reaction tomorrow. In the meantime, you got Sabres live up next, One Bills live, lots of stuff from them today, and, of course, Shope the Bulldog. And then our draft coverage continues all night long here on WGR.